Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, for everybody out at Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway, Marquee Entertainment Center, 18 TVs, big screens, Houston Liverpool Supporters Club. By the way, Peter plays Dynamo games out there. So our games that we have had on 55 this year. So some of you Liverpool supporters, maybe you want to call in and tell us why you're a Dynamo fan, because I know some of you are. 713-780-3776. Somebody can maybe shed some light on that. So a big thank you to Hugh O'Connor's. A big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And, of course, Nebo Bandovic and MB Elite Realty. I'm going to go to Twitter, Glenn Davisock, real quick here. He simply goes by M. He says, John, how much money did you spend on the rebrand? I'm sure you're not going to be able. Well, I'm going to let you answer it. And why wasn't it used to sign a world-class DP?
Wow, I didn't expect that question. But I didn't either.
I thought it was a good one.
typically for a rebrand of this magnitude, there would be a lot of money spent. And again, it's kind of good news, bad news, is given the fact that we're in the middle of a global pandemic, we weren't able to have the kind of event, launch event, that we had originally blueprinted, and it was to have all of our season ticket members and our sponsors and fans and supporters down at the stadium and have a concert and do some really cool things to celebrate the rebrand. And that was going to be a costly venture, as you can imagine, to feed and provide beverages for several thousand people. And but COVID has presented us with some challenges to do this and try and do it in a big way, but do it virtually. And to be perfectly honest, it came in a lot less expensive than we had originally originally budgeted. And that's a good thing, because the business has struggled this year, given the fact that we didn't have fans and didn't have nearly as many home games as we typically would have. So it was not a lot of money for a rebrand. I can tell you that. I can't tell you how much, but it was not a lot of money. And so I've read a lot of the comments about that. I wish you would have spent that money on a player. And you may be sorely disappointed with the quality of the player, given the budget that we spent. But that's maybe a conversation for another day.
Dynamo President John Walker, let's go to Brandon. Brandon, you're on with the president.
Hey, John. This is Brandon. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very well, Brandon.
Good. I understand, and with all due respect, I understand you guys took 2 years to do the rebrand, but I'm really curious on what, during those 2 years, made you decide to call us a football club, but yet we play soccer in America?
Yeah, great question, and one that MLS actually challenged us on. You know, there's been more of a move within the U.S. To call some of the new franchises soccer clubs, and in both Orlando, and I think in maybe Nashville, and maybe a couple more. But we looked at both. We really did. We really felt like FC was more emblematic of who we are here in this market, because although, yes, we are in the United States, this is Texas and this is Houston, certainly, so it's American soccer, but there's such a multicultural, multinational demographic here in Houston that we thought it would resonate with a lot of the folks who were either born outside of the United States and live here in Houston, or are maybe one generation removed from who maybe their parents grew up outside of the United States. And so We thought it was more relevant for the folks here in this market. And the reason we did it, you know, as we said in the video earlier, is it's more to represent the evolution that the club's undergone in the first 15 years. You know, there's a great history there, some successes, the addition of the stadium, the addition of the Dash, the training facility, the growth in the academy, the Centers for Excellence, all of those kinds of things have taken what was, you know, the first group of guys who rolled into town in 2006 and really grown it into a proper club.
All right. We thank you for that call, Brandon. Let's keep it going with John Walker, the Dynamo president. John, let's go to Jose now.
Hello?
Jose, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Glenn. Hi, John. Hi. I wanted to start off by saying that you're right, Glenn. It's not impossible to convert casual fan of the team and that supports another team. Like, take me, for example. I was a huge die-hard Chivas fan. But then, you know, I just, you know, I feel like now I support the Dynamo a whole lot more than I do Chivas, you know. I go to games. I've been a season ticket holder since 2016. You know, this rebrand has been kind of disappointing because, I mean, and I feel like the real issues haven't really been addressed. We missed playoff six of the past seven seasons. And, well, I feel like the club put more effort into a rebrand than actually putting a winning product on the field. And, you know, with that money spent on the rebrand, we could have spent, you know, on quality players. And so I'm really disappointed and stuff. And, you know, and maybe two things I would have liked on the logo was maybe a star, you know, for the Lone Star State, I'm sorry, and the soccer ball, so that way people will know what sport we play. But with that being said, John, what other changes could we expect at the club? And most importantly, are we getting rid of Diesel? My little girl loves Diesel, so I hope not. Thank you.
Well, great question, Jose, and thanks for being a member, you know, since 2016. Diesel will be back, so I don't think anybody has to worry about that. He'll have new gear, but Diesel will be back. And appreciate your, you know, your comments about, you know, not making the playoffs for six out of the last 7 years. Nobody's more disappointed in that than we are. And I appreciate the notion that we put more effort into the rebrand than we did into being competitive, but I can assure you that's just not the case. You know, the creative team and the marketing agency that we use, Ninth Wonder, to do this, they work countless hours and, you know, over a long period of time to put together what it is that you saw today, and we're very proud of that. And I can tell you that Tab and the coaching staff and the rest of the technical staff, you know, down at Houston Sports Park, you know, they put an equal or even more amount of hours into not only trying to prepare for the season in really challenging times, but, you know, with new protocols that had them being tested for COVID every other day, having to live in a bubble environment for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks in Orlando, and then coming back and you know, playing without fans, they put a ton of effort into it. And, yeah, they fell short, and, yeah, we're disappointed. But it wasn't for a lack of effort, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think everybody recognizes that. And listen, we had some entertaining games at the stadium. We saw a differing system. It's attractive. It just needs the pieces. As Tab has said, it's a very differing system than the one that has been played in the past, which is basically a counterattacking team. Let's go now to Brian. Brian, you're on with the Dynamo president, John Walker.
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on the immense lack of local coverage of the club in what is the fourth largest city in the United States. If it wasn't for my man Glenn kind of giving this his all, it would be a desolate landscape in Houston as far as covering the Dynamo goes. Also, FC Frisco still doesn't have a cup. Suckos!
I was on the phone with FC Dallas earlier today, and I wasn't quite as enigmatic with that, but I appreciate that. You know, in terms of the media coverage, you know, we've without Glenn, you're right. I mean, he's the tent pole in the coverage for soccer in this market, and rightly so, and we appreciate that. But maybe a little known fact for the listeners, but you know, we measure, and every day we have a service that gives us feedback on every mention within the local market, on the local news and radio and newspapers and other publications. And with a change in coaching staff, or a large percentage of the coaching staff, and TAB coming in, we were much more accessible this year. And I think Glenn, you maybe can attest to that. But our numbers are up in terms of coverage locally. Now, are we at the Texans, the Rockets, and the Astros level? No, we're not. Winning will help with that. More relevance in the market will help with that. So we know we have work to do, as was mentioned all throughout the day and all throughout the rebrand. But our numbers were actually up in terms of the number of times that we were covered by local media this year. So,
John Walker joining us here. We really appreciate this. This transparency is great, and I think TAB's transparency is encouraging to local media and how authentic and honest he is when talking about the game. Are there things you as a club, John, can do to build these relationships with all the local media, whether it's TV, radio, wherever we go?
Well, I think the transparency is the key, right? And making yourself available. And I've done about 9 or 10 media hits today, and I've tried to be as open and honest with all of those as I have with you. And I think TAB would do the same. So you know, that's part of what we're hoping comes across is this new look Dynamo, right? Is, you know, we want to be authentic to who we are and what it is we're trying to do, and also to represent the city. With honesty, with hard work, and you know, all the things that it takes to create a loyal fan base, in addition to winning, you know, which we know is a big part of it.
John, your transparency tonight is a great step. Can we expect more of this in the future from you, from the general manager, Matt Jordan? Because people want to hear from you guys. And I just think every single person that connects with you here tonight has a different opinion of the club, of you. It's just so healthy. I mean, I sat back and listened to TAB take the phone calls with the fans, and I had a huge smile on my face, because that's part of the reason this show was built, was to give people a platform, and it's been on 20 years. But the other part of it was simply being able to be the conduit to, through this program, to connecting a fan with a coach. And I just think those are magical moments.
Yeah, he was great last week. And to be fair, Glenn, he's been great since he arrived. And that's why we're so excited to have him as our coach and having him lead the charge. One thing I want to mention to you, Glenn, is don't forget this Friday, we're, as a part of the rebrand week here, we're going to be providing equipment, balls, nets, and things like that to Yates High School. To help them get their soccer program started out there. So we're not done this week in trying to make it very visible and tangible in our commitment to the city and sort of a refresh for who we are, and that's a big part of it on Friday at Yates High School.
John, I have another caller here. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler, you're on with John Walker, the president of the Houston Dynamo.
Can y'all hear me all right?
Yes.
John, this question kind of encapsulates the whole entire night and people's questions that they've asked you. So tell me why I should believe our owners, yours, Katie's, Matt's, and everyone else's words in the front office. Because recently, and for the past several years, it has been empty words for y'all with nothing to back it, and your words carry significant weight. For example, DC United, throughout their history, just in regards to the crest, have spent modernized tweaks on their crest that have embedded their history without taking it away. Why didn't y'all go down that route and instead directly knock off the University of North Dakota Athletics logo and slap a hexagon around it? Thank you.
Well, good questions, and you ask a bunch of them there. But I appreciate it. Honestly, I'm not familiar with the University of North Dakota logo, so I couldn't tell you there. And what you see is a derivation of what started as something completely different and kind of morphed into what it ended up being today. So at no point during that process did we really look at any other logo. In terms of believing, you know, the company, you know, Glenn, we talked earlier about, you know, the soccer loyalists, right, and soccer purists, and that's going to come down to production on the pitch, and we know that, and that's what Tab and the technical staff are committed to doing. We're not in this business to not make the playoffs. That doesn't make sense for us economically. It doesn't make sense for us from a relevance in the marketplace. So we do not set out to disappoint. For many of you listening, the proof will be in the pudding there. And I would just ask you to continue to be patient with us as Tab tries to get his system and the roster that suits his system in place ahead of next year. And if you're not quite ready to come out and join us at BBVA Stadium, we get it. But our commitment is that we're going to continue to try and right the ship here. And I would just ask you to continue with your patience.
John Walker joining us, president of the Houston Dynamo. Let's go to Bogdan right now. Bogdan, what do you have for John Walker, the president?
Hey, thanks for taking the call, and thank you for staying late, John. We appreciate the time. And I will second what Glenn said. You guys sound so good on the radio. You guys are so approachable and so darn transparent. It's like sometimes it's like, man, we can't even get upset with them because they're so transparent. And so is Tab and even Matt when he came on. But one of the things that I wanted to run by you, John, is looking at the poll numbers that you took from a lot of the season ticket holders, so forth, there's just one common theme throughout, right? And you probably know which one it is. How do you plan to address the lack of trust on your ability, not yours personally, but the ownership and the front office and the coach when it comes to the product on the field? I mean, that's a huge hurdle.
It is. But it's not as daunting as you might think, right? Because had we made the playoffs this year, the tone of this conversation would be completely different.
And you're right. Totally cures a lot.
Yeah, it's totally our drive and our focus, and everybody's mission is to get to the playoffs next year, and not only get to the playoffs, but make a run, and to have an exciting product on the field. And, you know, whether that's young guys, old guys, I think Tab wants to go younger. Whether it's slower guys or more athletic guys, I think Tab wants to get more athletic. Whether it's high scoring or low scoring, I think Tab wants to run up 5 goals a game, right? Right. So that's what we're going to be focused on trying to do. And as I mentioned, you know, and Glenn saw, you know, that style can be very, 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 very entertaining and can have some success as well. And so we're banking on Tab to be able to make the changes to the roster to do that. We are planning and budgeting right now for next year as if we were going to be a playoff team. And, what you saw today in terms of the rebrand and trying to repositioning the club is just another step in that process, but we know we have to earn everybody's trust by being successful on the pitch, and that's what we're all here to do.
One more question,
Bogdan. Make it quick because we got about 1 minute here, and we got to let John go. So make this one quick to John.
How do you feel when I guess the majority of the fans refer to us as a small market team? Do you buy into that?
Well, we're not. Houston is the third or fourth largest market in the country, and that's why we're so optimistic about the future for the club. Is not only just the sheer number, but the number of people who love the game of soccer, and you know, we've got really good infrastructure with the club. We now own our our training facility at the sports park. We've got a good stadium downtown that we put some good money into. We feel like we've got a really good staff from a business perspective and the right staff in place now from a technical perspective. So we feel very optimistic.
Big thank you to that question, Bogdan. And, John, I want to thank you for your transparency. We'd love to have you on again here in the near future. I think tonight's a really healthy night for all involved, and I hope you enjoyed it. And thanks again for just the honesty, for being up front, and for coming on the program and handling these calls, because I think a night like tonight can go a very, very long way.
Glenn, I appreciate it as always, and I appreciate your listeners and their questions. I'm happy to do it anytime.
All right, John. Have a great night. Thanks for sticking with us through a heavy day of media for you. That is duly noted. We do know that. Thank you. Take a break here. Stressless and Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Stressless recliners are recommended by chiropractors all over the world. I need one, by the way. I told you that story about having vertigo, and I laid in the Stressless to get myself together. Stressless recliners and sofas, they're made in Norway. You get them at Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, 2775 Fondren, near Westheimer. We'll take you to break with a little Stevie Ray Vaughan. We come back with U.S. Under-20 national team coach Anthony Hutson, speaking about his relationship with Greg Berhalter and more. It's all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
Hola, soy Mateo Bajamich. Les quería mandar un saludo muy grande a Soccer Matters y les mando un abrazo muy grande.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As we roll on here tonight, we're going to end up here with an incredible interview. Anthony Hutson, the under-20 national team coach, going to join us now. Anthony is 39 years of age. You remember him at the Colorado Rapids, has also coached New Zealand and Bahrain, and, of course, is also the son of the legendary Seattle Sounder, Alan Hutson, who people will remember from Chelsea, Stoke, and Arsenal as well. And he joins us now. Anthony, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Glenn, good evening. It's good to speak to you.
It's great to have you on, and I like that you got dressed for the occasion. Unlike me, you look very good in the U.S. top. So you and I had a little conversation before we got on the air just about the amazing growth of the sport in this country. Care to comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting for me because I was here in my early coaching career. I actually started my coaching career in the USL when I was 24, 25. And then I left, and as you mentioned there, I've been to New Zealand and Bahrain, actually coached for a few years back in England. And then I've obviously returned. And to see the growth since I've just in the time since I've been away and come back is incredible. And we talked about a few teams, the Atlantas, the Seattle Sounders, LAFCs, these teams. I mean, it's just, it's very, very evident that the game is going in one direction here. And it's amazing to see.
All right. So just take my listeners through, you know, how you got the under 20 job. You were at the Rapids. We'll talk a little MLS as we go along in this interview. But how did you get the under 20 job?
Yeah, I had a couple of interviews with Ernie and a few of the staff at US Soccer. I obviously had known Greg through playing against Columbus, and then when I left Colorado, I went and met with Greg a few times. Greg's someone that, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for. There's a few coaches in MLS that you know, I've just really respect and admire. Greg's one of them. You know, people like Peter Vermees, even you know, the sort of legend that I took over from Tab. You know, there's some really big coaches here that I really respect, and Greg's one of them. So when I left Colorado, and I was fortunate enough to be local to Chicago, and I was able to come and see Greg quite regularly and just talk soccer and talk coaching and methods and these types of things. And Greg's very open with things like that. And then obviously the job came up. Interview, and then I was very pleased that I was offered the job and went straight into a camp in January.
And you've had a tremendous amount of international experience already. You've worked with under 23 teams in New Zealand. The connection between you and Greg, I'll lead you into that now. That was something I was going to wait till later, but the connection between you and Greg in the under 20s to the full national team tactically and through all these other ideas, how heavily linked is that?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that the Federation wants, and one thing I agree with and believe in because of my time, not just with New Zealand, but even at Bahrain, because I actually started with the Olympic team in Bahrain and then went to the first team. So I really see the value, and especially when you have small nations like that where you don't have a big player pool, I think it's really important that you have to look at your youth. You have to, you know, give them a pathway, a really clear pathway, and not just a pathway. You've got to help them be successful when they get there. And I think the biggest thing for that is alignment. So, you know, alignment's key. And I think what that looks like with us here, which has been amazing for me, I've loved it. I've really enjoyed up to now sort of my involvement in that and Greg really leading the way. We have, you know, two really intensive meetings every week, and I'm talking about intensive, you know, hours and hours worth of analysis, covering the whole player group, not just on the men's team, but the, you know, on the youth side. I present players on the youth side to Greg and the first team, and then we obviously have many discussions in between that. So I think we're all on the same page in terms of scouting. And then when it comes to style of play, you know, all we're doing is talking about, style of play and philosophy and trends in the game and studying best practice, looking what works best for us. And I think, and I really do believe as well, I think my responsibility as the under 20 coach is to get as many of our young players in the first team as possible. And there's two things for that. For these guys to get there and stay there, first of all, when they get there, they need to understand the style of play. They need to understand the principles. They need to, you know, because you see this camp that's just happened now. I mean, they probably only had two real training sessions before the first game. I mean, it's unbelievable, really, too. So if you're a young kid going into that environment and you've got two training sessions, let's just say over the course of it, you've got maybe 40 minutes in really specific exercises to show the coach that you can trust it. You can trust me. Well, for him to be able to be successful, we need to be following the same way in terms of principles, and then also off the field, on and off the field, behavior, culture. This is what we want to look like. This is who we want to stand for. So that's the relationship. And so far, I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot, and it's been a really good experience so far.
Talking to Anthony Hudson, the under 20 national team coach for the United States. When you get these under 20 players, Anthony, habitually, their habits, because now they're at some clubs in Europe and they've had different upbringings in the game. Are there training habits developed, or are some of them, do you have to try to improve the professionalism in that area?
Yeah, I think the previous coach Tab, who did an incredible job, and really I'm just trying to build upon that. I think Tab would probably be able to speak even more with even more clarity about how this group has evolved over the years. I mean, from what I see, and you know, maybe others could say differently, from what I see, the level of quality of player I believe has improved over the years at this age group. And I think that the reason I say that is because I think more and more players are playing in first teams. You know, we've seen that in MLS recently. I think there's so many young players breaking into first teams, and then obviously lots of players that playing at big clubs over in Europe. So for me, the quality is improving. So I think when you talk about when they come into camp in terms of training habits and professionalism, you know, a lot of these young guys now, they're knocking on the door of first teams, and they have really good habits. And most of all, they have really good mentality in terms of knowing what professionalism is, you know, how to take information on, they're not new to tactics and meetings and the technical side of the game. They're very open, and not only open, I think they expect it. So so that side of it is a lot more advanced than where it was years ago. I think the key part of it is, for me, is relationships. You know, building relationships with these guys, because I feel part of my role is to support these in their development. I want these guys to make it the highest level they can and get to the first teams and all that. And I think for us to do that, we've got to be a support to them. So we may talk about this in a little while, but that's a big part of my role in between camps is really trying to build relationships with these players and helping them develop.
Anthony, do you see the technical side of the game improved? You know, are they better passers of the ball, better under pressure with the ball, better with their control in tight areas? Do you see that? Because I feel like I see that on the outside.
Yeah, Glenn, I don't think there's any doubt in that. I think, and I think, you know, my opinion, I can give my opinion, but on the, you know, what we know to be true is these players now, a lot of them are playing, we saw in this recent camp, you know, some of the 20s, the younger players playing for the first team and technically on a really high level. Yeah. There's players that weren't in this camp that are playing in MLS, that are playing in other leagues around the world, and technically they're comfortable. I think now I look at, and I have this discussion with a lot of people when they ask about the level of my group. And I think now you don't see a typical American type player playing overseas. They look like now, they look like European players. They look like South American players. Technically, they're evolving. They're a lot more comfortable on the ball. They really value the quality of pass and being able to break lines. I mean, the evolution of the American players, I think, is definitely evolving, improving. And it's not just my opinion. We can look around all the leagues. These guys are doing it at a high level now.
So when you look and see the opportunities these guys, in other words, the U.S. field's a midfield that includes a player from Red Bull Leipzig, Valencia, and Juventus. I mean, when I just thought about that for a second, I just found that absolutely stunning and wonderful. I'm assuming in your discussions with coaches all around the world and in your network and other countries, that are you feeling that the American player maybe is coveted and valued even more when you talk to people?
I think people within the game, definitely, and overseas, more and more people are more interested in young American players because of the players that you've just mentioned. People are seeing the quality that's coming through. I think without a doubt, that is definitely improving. That young players are getting more and more respect in America, and not just through being good players, but actually the type of players now that the country's developing, which is really exciting. And you mentioned those names there. You know, I even straight away, I mean, I love the fullback at Barcelona. There's, you know, these sorts kind of players that just real top talents. And it's exciting for the game. I think, you know, a lot of people got a glimpse of the first team in this camp of what is to come in the future, the type of team this can be, the style of play they can play, the type of players that we have in the squad. Well, I can assure you, in the younger age groups and even below me, and I have the 2001s, the under 20s, the 2003s, the younger players, these Kevin Paredes and Moses Nyman, these guys that you see in MLS. I mean, I'm like, it's an exciting group coming through. It really is.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. How about some of your thoughts on some of the players that you worked with in the 6-2 win over Panama? I think Sebastian Soto, right? Yes. Richie Ledesma, are those some of the ones you've worked with? Or
yeah, to be fair, a lot of the guys in the 20s that were in this camp, like Uli Yanez, these guys, even Big C, who you didn't see him, he's the goalkeeper who's at Leicester City, who's a real high potential. You know, he could be a top goalkeeper. You know, he's been training with the first team at Leicester this season. He's only 17. But we had a camp in January alongside the first team, and a lot of our 20s were in the first team in that camp as well. And they're just really exciting players. You know, when we get to Touchwood, when we get to the qualifiers and the World Cup, you know, hopefully we can get some of those guys back and playing for the 20s. Because I think if we do, we'd have a really exciting team. But look, the key thing is that these guys are pushing into the first team and getting experience there, which is really, really important.
All right. So when it comes to that moment where you got to kind of lobby a little to get a couple of these guys to help you in an under 20 World Cup, how does that work? I mean, I know you've gone through that in the past, probably with the under 23s in New Zealand and others. You know, how does that work? Obviously, I understand it's very respectful, but, you know, how does that decision ultimately get made, whether somebody drops back down to help one of the younger youth national teams?
I think it's all about communication, and we speak a lot. You know, we have a lot of communication within the staff. You know, I said, prior to this, you know, twice a week we have really, really intensive meetings, you know, 5-6 hour meetings where we cover all the players and we talk about the players. And I think what comes out of that is just really seeing where players fit best in terms of their own development. So to answer your question, I think when it comes down to it is what is the what's happening at that time in that window. You know, if there's a Gold Cup, if there's qualifiers, and you know, they may take priority. You know, it's all that, you know, so that's the starting point. You know, what's going on at that moment? Maybe the 23s have got their qualifiers for the Olympics, and we have a friendly window where the priority would be the 23s, for example. And then it comes down to what's best for the player and his development. You know, is it best for him to go and sit on a bench for the first team? Maybe it is, and be around the first team. Is it best for him to come and play in a big tournament? Maybe that is the best. And I think these are just conversations that are going to be ongoing. And I think it comes down to alignment again. You know, we're all, especially, and this pandemic, one of the positives that's come from it is the fact that we've spent so much time together discussing all of this, because we've had to, because of the situation. I think what's come out of that is we're all pretty much on the same page and looking at the same things in the right way.
Talking to Anthony Hudson, the under 20 U.S. national team coach. And the reason I asked that about the under 20 World Cup, because that's a coveted title. I mean, U.S. soccer wants to win that. It's the second biggest FIFA event, arguably. And that's something that's a feather in the cap of a country, winning an under 20 World Cup. I mean, I know it's not the big World Cup, but it is still something that you guys want to win.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the previous winners of those World Cups, you know, the teams that have won, I mean, if you look at, we look at Vlatko, who's with, so Panovic, who was with Chicago Fire, and prior winning it with Serbia. Yep. Now, if you look a lot of the teams that win it, the players that end up going on to playing at a really, really high level. And I think what's important is, you know, going through that, when you have a good crop of players and going through a tournament like that, and you're able to have success, and you're able to beat teams that you're familiar with, that, you know, big teams, I think that only translates to the senior team. You know, it does. That mentality, that understanding of how to win game tournament soccer, and to, you know, winning qualifiers, that's really, really important for the first team when they step up.
Anthony, let me just talk to you about your father, because he's a guy I watched at Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands, and, you know, was a legendary player at places like Chelsea, Stoke, and Arsenal, Seattle Sounders. How much of an influence? I mean, we know the father-son relationship when it comes to so much is influential. Tell me about that with your father, Alan, and the sport of soccer.
Well, it's interesting, because I was born in Seattle, and but as you can tell from my accent, I grew up in England. So my dad was there for a few years, and he played in Seattle. And where I grew up, listening to my dad tell me how much he loved it out here, he truly did. He loved his life in Seattle, and I think he just loved. I heard so many stories about the game back then, on and off the field, but it was such an amazing part of his life. And so I always grew up, you know, really intrigued by soccer out here. But yeah, he was an incredible player. As a kid, and this is no joke, I used to carry around an old VHS tape of his debut game against West Germany when he played for England, and he was man of the match at Wembley against the current world champions, and I've never seen a debut like it. And I think I'm honest enough not to be biased, but this truly was an incredible debut. I mean, he ran the game. I can hear the commentator, you know, one of those old English style commentators, just constantly saying my dad's name, and he just controlled the game, and I was so proud of him. You know, even times as, you know, part of my life, I lived in Stoke, and he played for Stoke City. And if anyone has the opportunity to go and see a live game at Stoke City, the fans there, the atmosphere is incredible. But there were times as a kid where people, I'd bump into fans, and they would know my dad was Alan Hudson. And they would come to me. I remember this older gentleman one day coming up to me, and he thanked me, and then he started crying, and he said, "You don't realize how much joy your dad's given to our city." And it was like, and it, you just really growing up, you understand the power and the effect the game can have on people's lives, and it's more than just a game. It really is. And so I grew up with a lot of pride, and very, very, you know, grateful to be exposed to that lifestyle.
Thank you for sharing that story. That's a special one right there. That's remarkable in its own way. All right, we're talking to Anthony Hudson, U.S. Under 20 national team coach. All right, so you took over for Tab Ramos. Now, Tab is in our market now, and he's moving the Houston Dynamo forward here. How much did you talk with Tab once you got the job? Because, you know, he's just such an authentic guy when it comes to talking football. And you can, speaking of passion, you can tell when he talks about the game, it's priority.
Yeah. I mean, look, Tab's done amazing things in the game out here as a player, as a coach. His record for the 20s, what he's done for the 20s is quite incredible. And I think you see, you know, we're talking about a lot of the young players coming through now and how well the young players are doing in the game. Tab has a big part to play in that. So it's a real privilege to be taken over from him. I know we had a conversation and I had loads of questions for him, and he was very gracious and very open and honest. And then the season started, and what you want to try and do is just leave coaches alone until the season finishes, unless you're talking about certain players. So, yeah, we had a really good lengthy conversation, and he was really, really helpful to me. And then what you tend to do, you tend to kind of build relationships with coaches where they have more of your players, or, you know, in the league, in MLS especially. So, but yeah, now the season's finished, I plan to renewing that conversation and getting back in touch.
Well, he may have had a few questions for you about Major League Soccer. It could work both ways, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Speaking of Anthony Hudson, under 20 coach for the U.S. national team. All right, I grant you one wish when it comes to player development in the United States. Something you could improve or add to or eliminate, whatever it is, what would it be for Anthony Hudson?
Well, Glenn, that's a tough one, because I think this is a contextual question and answer, because right now my only desire is for us to get the team together as much as we can, and to get the stadiums filled, to get money coming back in the game through fans, through TV, through sponsor, through everything, to get that enthusiasm that was there prior to the pandemic. Because when it comes to youth development and young players coming through, you really can't be. And I'll tell you a story about when I was living in Stoke, and I talked about the fans there. Any coach could have told me whatever they wanted to growing up. But standing in a stadium and listening to a crowd, a loud crowd, a full stadium, and watching your heroes kick a ball around on the field and play a game and win and score a late goal, and the crowd going wild, that is far more valuable to any young player than what any coach, I believe, can tell you. So my biggest wish is for those times to come back quickly, because I think it's so important, because players dream about being on the field and playing in front of those fans, big stadiums and all that. And that's what motivates you and drives you. So that's me. And then obviously to get the team together as much as we can, because I'm desperate to get them together and work with this really exciting group and start looking at the under 20 World Cup.
Real quick, when's the next time you expect or hope to get them together, the under 20s?
I'm hoping soon, because things are a lot more positive now. As you know, we've had some great news about the vaccine, and we see how that plays out. The first team, the men and the women, have had successful camps now. You know, from a safety and health and safety point of view, which was a big issue. It's a challenge for international teams more so than club teams. So there's been success there. So I think everyone's a lot more positive now. So I think now what we need to do is just carefully plan around when our qualifiers are. And then start looking at our camps. But it's going to be soon, for sure. It's going to be soon. Trust me, I'm desperate.
Yeah, I can tell. You're probably zoomed out. We appreciate we appreciate you coming on tonight, Anthony. This is great stuff. My listeners will appreciate it as well. I want to wish you the best of luck with the under 20 national team and getting back on those fields soon.
Thanks, Glenn. Have a great evening.
All right, that's Anthony Hudson, the under 20 national team coach. How about that for a way to end the show here tonight? Reminder, a big thank you to Aaron Raybould, producing tonight, Victor Ariza, podcast, podcastarena.com, Spotify, iTunes. That's where you can get it. Also at glendavissoccer.com. Until next week, on behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.